Well, I know you've been watching your calendar, and you know that it's the third Monday of the month, and that means that I get to have my guest, Dr. Fred Harvey, here on No Nonsense Nutrition. Welcome to the show, Dr. Harvey.
Thank you. Good morning.
Did you have a good night's sleep?
I had a great night's sleep.
You know, there's a lot of people out there that don't have a good night's sleep.
That is so true.
Now, how often do you see that in your practice?
Oh, I see someone who's having sleep difficulty almost every day.
Yeah, so do I. And I always tell people you have to decide whether you're having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep or both.
Right.
Because we address those issues really very differently. What's the very first thing you think of given somebody if they say that they don't sleep well?
Well, I'd like to find out what their sleep hygiene is like, what's going on in their bedroom. What's it? They have a TV playing, a radio? Are there distractions? Are there lights on? What's going on just in that arena?
Okay, so sleep hygiene is all about how the bedroom looks and whether you've accommodated it correctly for sleep.
Yes.
I know one of the things that I learned about my body is that I like to sleep colder than I like to be in the room.
Yes.
I want to turn that air conditioner down 2 degrees at night.
I think a lot of people feel that.
Yeah.
The cooler temperature is more conducive to a good night's sleep.
But the thing that really changed my sleep habits is when I started wearing an eye mask.
Yes, actually, thank you for turning me on to that idea. It's a great concept because when the sun starts peeking its head up earlier and earlier as it gets closer to summer, I don't necessarily want to be up at 6 in the morning.
Right. Well, you know, we forget that our bodies are hardwired to get up with the sun.
Yes.
And what's actually true is that when the sun is about 15 degrees below the horizon, those little rays are coming right through the earth, and they're tickling the back of your eyeballs, and they're saying, hey, the sun's
right.
Coming up. You need to get up.
And last night, we were dealing with another light source. The full moon was really shining brightly, and that can be
a
distraction, too.
It's going to be full tomorrow morning at 7:09 a.m., but who's counting?
That's right, but still, that big brown or big bright disc was shining in my windows last night.
Yeah, I had the big bright disc. I get it. Late.
Yes.
I get it in the wee hours of the morning, but people don't realize how much light affects sleep because light is the controlling factor for one of your brain neurohormones called melatonin. And I think today everybody's heard about melatonin. Melatonin is a hormone that is manufactured in your pineal gland, a little gland that's buried deep in your brain, and it is totally responsive to light. So as the night begins to wear on and it starts getting dark, then your brain starts to manufacture little dribbles of melatonin, and that melatonin ends up peaking during your sleeping hours, and then the second you shine light on your eyes, that melatonin gets switched off.
So as you're preparing to sleep, light sources can be really distracting because it'll interrupt that melatonin production till later and later in the evening. So if you're staring at a TV screen or a computer screen until the moment you're going to bed, you basically effectively shut off your melatonin production until you're away from that source.
Well, and that's it. People are reading and they're shining a bright light on a white page and they're getting a lot of reflection off that white page and they don't realize that that can affect how they go to sleep. I try to turn the overhead light off between 10 and 10:30. I go to bed at 11 o'clock.
Right.
And so I try to turn the overhead light off between 10 and 10:30. So the light of the television may be on because that's about the only time of the day that I watch TV.
Right.
I've already started to dim the room down. But mm-hmm. The thing that's really amazing about this hormone melatonin is how little light is necessary to shut it off. You know, when people put a night light up in their bedroom or in their bathroom because they're getting up in the middle of the night to toilet and they think, well, you know, I need to be safe, so I need to put this night light on to make sure I'm safe walking to the bathroom. And I tell them all the time, you know, blind people walk to the bathroom without tripping over everything.
That's right.
You can learn to turn all those night lights off, but not only the night lights, but the LED on the television, on the security system, on the alarm clock. There can be all kinds of sources of light in your bedroom that you don't think about, and you want to take electrical tape and cover them suckers up because even one candle power of light can interrupt your melatonin.
That is not a lot of light. And those little LEDs, many bedrooms will have five or six of them, and that LED alarm clock that has the shiny dial.
Right, right. I mean, between the clock and the TV and the VCR and the security system and the nightlight and everything, it's practically a stadium in there.
Yes.
And what the research has told us just recently, you know, they took individuals, they put them in a sleep lab, and they are hooked up to their blood in such a way that they can take a reading at any time. And so they measure the melatonin at different times of the night. And they kept these people in a black, black, black room, very dark, dark, dark room, no light whatsoever, completely blacked out. And then during the middle of the night, when the melatonin was high, they walked into the sleep laboratory with a flashlight. And they shined the flashlight on the people's feet, and their melatonin turned off.
Yes.
Is that mind-boggling that we have light receptors in virtually every cell of the body? We don't just have light receptors in our eyes.
One of my favorite studies was the transatlantic flying study, where they actually attached flashlights to the back of people's legs and had them shining on their popliteal space, which is like the back of the knee. It's the hole in the back of the knee. And that actually reset the melatonin so people didn't have jet lag when they were flying. They
Too
actually
wild.
Changed the whole melatonin picture.
And so people learn about melatonin. They learned about melatonin so much that they started putting it into food. You know, when we have this over-the-counter dietary supplement, it was only made available to us about 15 years ago. 1996 is when I remember that it came out. And it was originally talked about as a miracle cure for jet lag. Well, it turns out that there are some companies that are actually cooking the melatonin into a brownie with names like Lazy Cakes and Lula Pies and Kush Cakes. The products were sold online and, you know, at little convenience stores and even drug stores
and bars
right in the Harvard Square Co-op. And these brownies sell for $3 or $4 a piece, which is a pretty high amount to spend for a combination of a brownie and a melatonin pill. But the thing that was just amazing to me was the fact that they were touting it as kind of like Xanax in a brownie, that it was designed both to relax as well as to put somebody to sleep. And I think that's stretching the claim a little much. Melatonin is not a hormone that is used to relax. Melatonin is a hormone that's used to get you to sleep, among other things. It's also an antioxidant. And so it definitely has some benefits in the brain in terms of its antioxidant capacity. But the FDA has been brought to this party because the FDA is investigating the nature of putting melatonin into food, because individuals were buying this at the end of the night at the bar and then, you know, taking it home and eating that before they went to sleep instead of taking a melatonin pill. And when we look at, you know, eating Lazy Cakes, what a great name that they invented for all of, or developed for all of these things. But we have to understand that when we start putting various supplements into foods, we have to wonder whether that's really a good idea. And in fact, is it safe? You know, we've been putting things into foods for a while. You know, there's Snapple's iced tea out there has got kava kava in it. And Ben and Jerry's Tropic of Mango smoothie contains echinacea. Arizona's iced tea's memory elixir contains ginkgo biloba. And now we've got vitamin and water. What do you think of all that stuff, Doctor?
Well, I think it's rather deceptive because it's been labeled or marketed as being healthy, like Arizona green tea. Everybody thinks of green tea as a healthy antioxidant kind of beverage, but when you have 40 grams of high fructose corn syrup sweetening the stuff with a touch of honey just for flavor, it's a rather toxic substance. And the same goes for most of these other things. So it's interesting that the FDA is getting involved, and it should be, because melatonin and many of these supplements are not regarded as food substances. They're supplements. And to combine a food and a supplement is actually not legal per the FDA. Thus, these companies that have made these lazy brownie things have had to label all of them as not for food use, which is quite a bizarre concept. You're eating a brownie, that's food. How can you have that as not for food use and still be legal?
Well, but, you know, the thing is the bias that's here. They haven't done anything about Arizona iced tea and Snapple.
Right.
Putting these ingredients in there and selling them for food. They're not selling them as a supplement, and yet they target this because it has this aura of being something like a marijuana brownie.
Right.
You know, that it's going to end up relaxing you because it's got this special ingredient in it.
Yes.
And so I think there's a little bit of a bias here by the FDA in terms of who they went after, because I don't remember any front page New York Times articles about the fact that Kava Kava and Ginkgo Biloba were in iced tea. Do you?
No. But the thing is, I see a little bit of a difference there. They're not, like, Arizona does not make any label claims.
Uh-huh.
But the lazy cakes do. Relax.
Well, but I mean,
sleep.
If they call it memory elixir,
oh,
that's, you
they,
know, to
they
me,
do call it that. Okay. So, yeah,
yeah,
that
to
is
me,
a label
there's
claim.
A claim right in there.
Yes.
You know, when Snapple calls it moon tea drink, you know, that's pretty vague. And
yes,
I have to go back and read those labels to see. But food companies are spiking fruit drinks and breakfast cereals and snack foods and really misleading consumers about their health benefits. You know, it still makes me totally crazy every time I see somebody walking around with one of those products that's some variety of vitamin water.
Oh, yeah. That is,
I mean,
just
the
totally
absolute
hokey,
most expensive way you could possibly get a supplement into you. And, you know, I'm on a big campaign to stop buying plastic bottles anyway.
Right.
But all of those things that claim that they're, you know, smart water, vitamin water, good for you water. It doesn't make any difference what the name is. I'm not targeting any particular product. It's
right.
Just all of them are really pricey versions of what could possibly be even poor quality water with a cheesy supplement added to them.
Right. That's the other question about it, the cheesiness of the supplements. You and I have dealt with high-end, high-quality nutritional supplemental extracts, standardized, controlled, very high-quality product. We have no idea what they actually ground up and threw into the mix for a ginseng tea.
Yeah, what quality of ginseng.
And which type of ginseng.
Well, you know, I had a very interesting experience one time when I was on the public speaking tour, and I got to talk to people who owned vending machine companies that put the vending machines in big factories,
mm-hmm,
you know, where there's hundreds of people working in the factory and they have a lunchroom, but the lunchroom is like nothing but vending machines. So,
right.
I mean, they're selling more than soda pop and peanut butter crackers.
Prepackaged
they're selling
sandwiches
and fruit and yogurt and all
right.
sorts of things. And so I talked there, and I was giving this lecture about coffee and about, you know, there are benefits of coffee, et cetera, and talking about, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there was a guy in the back of the room, and he was kind of chortling to himself. Thank you, Lewis B. Carroll, for that word. chortling as I was talking. And actually, I'm not really totally used to public mockery when I'm when I'm giving a public lecture. And so I made a beeline to this guy after the lecture was over. And I said, what are you giggling about? And he handed me his card. And his card said, Mr. Coffee. And I don't mean the machine. His nickname was Mr. Coffee because he supplied coffee to tens of thousands of these vending machines.
Wow.
The prepackaged where you buy one cup.
Yes.
Well, he's the guy that supplies the coffee for that. And it turns out that he goes to South America every year on the coffee buying spree. And he said that they have, you know, calibers of coffee, you know, ABC in terms of quality.
Right.
And the thing that was so interesting to me was the fact that he said that the bottom end coffee, the coffee that none of the other vendors wanted to buy, was the stuff that McDonald's bought.
Wow.
And I thought that was kind of a surprise because, you know, McDonald's is such a huge corporation. They have to have such a tremendous volume that they have to get their line of vending products, you know, clean all the time,
right,
to make sure that they're provided with enough material. But it was kind of the same thing in terms of some of these ingredients that are in there. People don't realize that there are differences in things like ginkgo biloba, that there are differences in things like ginseng as far as quality is concerned.
Right.
Not so much with melatonin, because in the United States, we don't use melatonin that's been extracted from pineal glands of cows. Melatonin is actually synthetic. It's created in a laboratory.
Right.
It's, we don't take pineal glands out of animals and milk them in order to get melatonin. So the majority of the melatonin that's sold is all pretty standardized,
right,
as a synthetic product. But the idea is, what is its purity? But, you know, let's stop for just a minute in this expose about ingredients in the things that are referred to as functional foods. And let's really look at the benefits of melatonin, because there's no question that it has a benefit. First off, if somebody isn't melatonin deficient, then taking melatonin isn't going to do anything.
Right.
And that's why in my clinic, when I recommend melatonin to someone, I usually sample them one or two pills to try before they buy a bottle, because if they're not melatonin deficient, it won't do anything to improve their sleep. Do you agree with that?
It's only maybe one in three, I think, that really gets a benefit from it.
That's right. And so when we look at melatonin, it takes only a little teeny tiny amount to get you to sleep, just about a half of a milligram. The
right.
average pill that's at the health food store is a 3-milligram pill. So a half a milligram will get you to sleep, but it takes a time-released melatonin to keep you asleep. And so for years, I used a half a milligram to get somebody to sleep and 1.2 milligrams of time release to keep somebody asleep. You really don't need very much of it at all.
Right.
I have seen people that have taken really large doses of it and have ended up with a little bit of a hangover from it.
Yes. I made the mistake of actually taking the melatonin in the morning before I went to work one day.
Ooh.
And it was a relaxed day, but really it didn't put me to sleep. And that's the nature of melatonin. It's not something like an Ambien or one of the other sleeping pills.
You mean the pharmaceutical drug.
The pharmaceutical drug that would just knock you out. It's not a knockout pill. It suggests to your brain that it's a better idea to be asleep. But if you're awake and you're doing things, you override that suggestion.
Right. Well, you know, it's a powerful and versatile antioxidant. Melatonin protects both lipids and proteins against damage, and it can scavenge some of the most dangerous free radicals in the body that include things called hydroxyl radicals and hydrogen peroxide. Unlike other antioxidant, melatonin easily diffuses into all cells and it crosses the blood-brain barrier, and that's how it ends up not only helping us go to sleep, but protecting a delicate brain. We lose melatonin as our age advances, and so we not only lose the antioxidant protection, we also lose the sleep induction. And so melatonin is particularly low in individuals that have Alzheimer's disease, in individuals that have Parkinson's disease. And so melatonin supplementation may be incredibly valuable for people who have these neurological challenges as their age advances. But when people say you need less sleep as you get older, that's just not true.
Not at all.
People get less sleep as they get older, but they don't need less sleep. You know, when we look at managing one of the leading risk factors for stroke, melatonin definitely can come to the party, because individuals who get up first thing in the morning and they have their highest blood pressure reading of the day at that point, and some people, their blood pressure is 30 or 40 points higher.
That's
when
true.
They get up in the morning. Well, it turns out that using melatonin at nighttime can not only reduce nighttime blood pressure without changing the pulse rate, so
right.
it doesn't just slow the heart down. That's not how it's working. But that absolutely will reduce the risk of stroke. So there are very specific arenas other than just getting somebody to sleep or keeping them asleep that melatonin is good for. One of melatonin's most important applications is in fighting a really wide array of cancers, including breast cancer, liver cancer, brain metastases, non-small cell lung cancer. So what they found was that women who had metastatic breast cancer who didn't respond to chemotherapy, when they took melatonin, it actually made the chemotherapy work better. Prostate cancer, you know, one of the common malignancies in aging men, turns out that using melatonin created an improvement in treatment, drastically reducing the number of prostate cancer cells. So there is a good bit of research that's being done currently, at least 10 randomized control studies that I was able to find, that are looking for benefits to patients for cancer survival, and especially counteracting the toxicity of chemotherapy treatment. So I think that there's a lot of promising future in terms of the research for melatonin. I think it's sort of one of the neglected stepchildren of the neurohormone family, and too much of the light has been shined on it for sleep and not enough for its antioxidant properties.
Even pharmaceutical companies have gotten into it, and one has developed melatonin analog, a synthetic chemical that's almost exactly like melatonin, and it's a very effective sleep aid for the people that respond to melatonin. And what's really interesting about this one is that after taking it for 3 weeks or 4 weeks, some people actually reset their sleep cycle and then don't need it anymore.
Well, and that's what I tell people that take melatonin. Don't take it all the time. Give yourself a vacation from melatonin.
Right.
Because even if you're taking melatonin on a regular basis, I want you to stop a day out of the week or a week out of the month or, you know, a month out of the year. The idea is that I don't want your brain to develop dependency on constantly getting that melatonin dose. I want to see how your brain is working.
Right.
So anything from a half of a milligram up to 3 milligrams would generally be the dose that I would use to get somebody to sleep. Melatonin peaks in the body at about 30 minutes. So if you're one of the people that has trouble falling asleep, then taking the melatonin 30 to 60 minutes before you go to bed is the most effective way that you're going to be able to get to sleep. If you're an individual that has trouble staying asleep, then you may want to look at melatonin in time-released form. I use everything from 1.2 milligrams to 5 milligrams of time-released melatonin so that you're getting a little bit all through the evening.
Right.
And so the people that have mostly learned about melatonin for resetting the jet lag clock. You know, jet lag has a lot more negative effects than we ever realized. I think that they've never really wanted to study pilots and, you know, airline attendants who have the worst experience with jet lag.
Right.
Because they're going back and forth between time zones all the time. But one of the things that I learned when I was on the road all the time is anytime I'm traveling east, I had a heck of a time adjusting. But when I was traveling west, I usually didn't have any trouble adjusting, not if I didn't go more than 5 time zones. You know, if you go to Hong Kong or go to Sydney, Australia, and it's 15 hours
different. Your day is flipped over.
Your day is flipped over. You definitely have issues. But using melatonin on trips, especially when you're, you know, going from here to the West Coast or here to Europe, is a tremendous advantage. The most important thing that you want to do is that when you travel, is whatever your destination, east or west, get yourself out into the early morning sun. The early morning sun helps to reset the pineal gland.
Right.
And bring that eye mask and take that melatonin 30 minutes before you go to bed. But when you travel west, you need to just try to stay up. Even though it's a struggle, you need
That's
to
right.
just try to stay up. And when you're traveling east, you need to get up early, even though it's hard to get up. And so that's where melatonin comes in. But, you know, it brings me to the fact that it isn't just things like melatonin or ginkgo biloba or kava that are showing up in these foods, what we have is a deluge of claims now of foods that supposedly have benefits. And I mean, the one that I'm going to put right at the top of the list is old Jamie Curtis out there with the "I feel your pain" expression on her face, sitting on the couch and rubbing her tummy and telling you that 87% of the country suffers from digestive issues like occasional irregularity. And she is the one that's discovered that Activia can help you.
Yes.
So can Activia help us?
Activia can probably be of benefit, but I question the quantity. In fact, I was reading that same article and saw that their label claim for Activia a day changes your bowels, when their studies actually show that it took 3 Activias a day to change your bowels because there's not enough bacteria in it to do the work without taking 3 a day.
And the thing about it is, you and I study on a regular basis, there's lots of different critters that you can put in a cup of yogurt or
Absolutely.
In a probiotic pill, and the particular bacteria that's in this yogurt doesn't have any studies on it, except the one that the company did where you had to eat a freaking quart of this stuff every day.
Exactly.
You know? And that was it. When the FTC came after Danone for this deceptive claim, they had to end up having a settlement with them because $21 million was paid as a penalty by Danone.
They didn't admit any wrongdoing, but they were willing to kick up $21 million to stop the...
$21 million, but I didn't do anything wrong. Okay, so they're making a claim. First off, you know, have you ever looked at the price of this stuff?
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you could buy the best probiotic in the world and take it. You know, our good old friend, how are you?
Yes.
I know it sounds funny to say that, but that's actually the name of a bacteria. It's called how are you. It's the code name for a particular kind of bifida bacteria. But you could get the very best bacteria on the planet, one that we know the heritage of it. We know that it's a human bacteria. We know that it belongs in your bowel.
And we know that it positively affects the bowel in many ways.
Yeah. And you could do it with an organic product, which, of course, Activia is not organic.
Right.
And so I could give you the best organic yogurt that exists and a probiotic for less money than I can buy a product like this that's already been charged with false claims. And you didn't think that anybody as pretty as Jamie Lee Curtis would lie to you, did you?
She's not lying. It helped her bowels, maybe.
Right, maybe. Well, there's lots of other products that are there, and as you go down one aisle and the next, you're going to see, you know, Quaker Oats telling you that oatmeal will reduce cholesterol, and Benecol spread telling you it will reduce cholesterol, and, you know, milk telling you it's going to support brain health, or, you know, now...
Cocktail peanuts will help your heart.
Well, I mean, I love the Progresso soup with reduced sodium that was heart healthy. You know, one of my clients came in and had a can of Progresso soup just a couple of weeks ago and actually brought the label in to me. And it had 2.5 servings in a can. Well, excuse me, who are these 2.5 people that you're going to serve this one can of soup to? Anyway, she ate the whole can, and it was 1,400 milligrams of sodium in the
can. That's your daily allowance.
And 1,500 is the maximum that she should have. So when we begin to look at all of the claims that are out there, it may be a little hard for you to navigate through all of the aisles in any supermarket, because you might start believing in miracles, or at least in miracle foods, as you go up and down the aisle. You know, the foods and drinks that help your heart, lower your cholesterol, trim your tummy, coddle your colon, toss them in your cart, you already feel better, don't you?
Absolutely.
But what's wrong with this picture, doctor?
Well, claims don't necessarily match up with the nutritional value of the food.
Well, and claims aren't necessarily proved, and that's really the difference.
That's true, too.
That's really the difference between the United States and Britain. In Britain, you can't put anything on a label, anytime, anywhere, anyhow, until it's been investigated by their version of the FDA. So, yes, we have First Amendment that protects commercial speech that is truthful and not misleading, but I think we got a lot of misleading going on.
Huge amounts. Consider the Quaker meal square, oatmeal squares, the dry packaged cereal that they say is heart healthy. Well, if you eat a bowl of oatmeal and they have a heart healthy bowl, I think it's three-fourths of a cup, uncooked, is a large amount of oatmeal. That's got enough fiber in it to actually affect your cholesterol, but you have to eat three bowls of oatmeal squares like 650 calories of cereal alone before you even get to the milk to get the amount of fiber you need to affect your cholesterol. So they're really very misleading.
Well, I mean, the thing that I loved was the claim that was on the Welch's grape juice. You know, it says it doesn't have any fat, and it's emblazoned with that red heart certification that comes from the American Heart Association, which, of course, they have to pay for.
Right.
But an 8-ounce glass of grape juice has 36 grams of sugar in it.
Yes. Do they put a diabetes frowny face on it next to the happy heart?
Right, right. They should, because, I mean, a Snickers bar only has 30 grams of sugar in it, and a glass of grape juice has got 36. Now, granted, grape juice is good.
Right.
And granted, grape juice has my favorite word, anthocyanins, in it.
That's
right. You know,
right.
Those good antioxidants in it. But what's really true is your body would much prefer it if you ate grapes than if you drank grape juice.
That's right.
And if you're going to drink juice, you need to get a little juice cup like my mother gave me when I was 4 years old.
The 4-ounce cup.
Yeah, 3 or 4 ounces. I had a little blue glass.
Mm-hmm.
And that little blue glass is what you got your juice in. And that's really
right.
The perfect amount of juice. So there's nothing wrong with grape juice. It's like the pomegranate juice that's out there. You know, if you look at the billboards for pomegranate juice, they said death-defying.
Cheat death.
Cheat death. How's that? Does that sound like a claim to you?
How about
drink it? Drink to your prostate health. You know, now, I have to give it to the company that puts out the pomegranate juice, because at least of all their studies, they spent $34 million to sponsor pomegranate research, and 65 of those studies have been printed in peer-reviewed journals. So their research did show that it was good for circulation and reducing inflammation. But the thing about it is, at least when I'm dealing with things like grape juice and pomegranate juice, I'm dealing with real food.
Right.
When I look at frosted bite-sized mini wheats, I don't feel like I'm dealing with real food.
No, and Kellogg's even got a little bit of a slap on the wrist from the FDA as well for marketing that as a brain food for children.
Oh, yeah. You know that frosted mini wheats are going to make your kids smarter.
Absolutely.
I guess we ought to be careful of our snide remarks. We don't want anybody to actually believe us. The thing about Kellogg's is, you know, when you look at companies like Kellogg's and Danone and Quaker, I mean, you're expecting them to have integrity.
You would like that.
I'm expecting that they're out there doing rigorous science, and that they're reporting these benefits to me out of the goodness of their heart, that they really care about my welfare.
Have you heard of corporate profit?
Boy, I sure have. But, you know, don't you have that kind of naive illusion that these are America's standards?
Well, I think anybody with ethics has that naive illusion that other people have ethics as well. And it's very difficult to understand that.
Now I know why I never went into politics. But, you know, with so many Americans being willing to pay a premium for ready to eat, ready to use, ready to heat, ready to go foods, more and more of these functional foods are being thrown at consumers, and it's hard for people that are out there that are in a hurry and trying to eat well and trying to eat conscious to not be captivated by these flags that are on the front of the box without turning the box over and reading the information on the nutrition panel.
Right. The nutrition panel is so crucial, because that is where you're going to find out that there's 36 grams of sugar in a glass of grape juice.
Well, I had never heard the term credence goods before, but that's what economists call these products, are credence goods. Isn't that a novel way to use that language?
Yes.
Most people can't evaluate the claims for these products of functional foods, so they rely on the experts. They rely on the regulators. And I have to, you know, tip my hat both to the FTC and the FDA for, you know, coming after Activia and Kellogg's and Quaker, you know, for making these kinds of claims, but there are so many of them out there. I don't know how you get on top of all of them.
Well, the regulators, I'm sure, are overwhelmed with the amounts because these products are coming out from all directions in all varieties, from big manufacturers to little manufacturers to mom and pop shows. Everybody has a claim now.
To Kush cakes.
Kush cakes and right. Lazy cakes and all that stuff, yes.
Well, the answer is going to be really simple of how we deal with this. You know, I've always said to eat what occurs in nature.
Mm-hmm.
That's your first rule. Look
exactly.
at your plate of food and ask yourself how close that is to what occurs in nature. And so, you know, if I look at my breakfast this morning of papaya and strawberry and blueberries with organic yogurt on it, well, mm-hmm. the blueberries, the strawberries, and the papaya all occurred in nature.
Yes.
The yogurt didn't occur in nature. Something had to be done to allow it to ferment.
Right.
But it's still made out of something that occurs in nature.
It's pretty close to nature.
Pretty close to nature. If I look at my dinner last night, ooh, I made a wonderful stir fry last night. I had one big yellow onion, two bunches of bok choy, a shredded carrot, a half a can of water chestnuts, and I had a little bit of ginger dressing left, and I put that ginger dressing on top.
Mm.
And I had some rice noodles, and I had a little piece of duck left over. I had made a duck breast a couple days ago, and so I chopped up that duck breast and put that in with the noodles and just put a little bit of Parmesan on that. Kind of an odd combination.
Odd?
But
it was tasty.
Fabulous. But the duck occurred in nature.
Yeah.
The Parmesan occurs in nature with a little bit of help.
A little bit of help.
You know, the bok choy and the onion and the carrot and the water chestnuts and the ginger, you know, they all occur in nature.
Exactly.
And so when what didn't occur in nature? The rice noodles didn't occur in nature, but at least they started with rice.
Right.
But over and over again, when I tell people, you don't need a PhD to tell the difference between a Pringle and a potato.
Yeah, when you're looking at the Quaker options, you have Quaker oatmeal squares or you have old-fashioned oats. I'd choose the old-fashioned oats. They're close to the ground. They're
what occurred
in nature.
But you see, I had a client in my clinic last week, and she said, I don't have time to make breakfast. And I said, oh, don't worry about it. I said, you're going to have so much time on your hands when you're in the nursing home. Well, but, you know, she was one of those, every once in a while you have to give people shock.
Yes.
To get them to realize that 15 minutes every single day that you spend doing a little bit better job with your food, an hour spent every day doing a little bit of a better job with your food, you know, you're really talking chump change.
Right.
In terms of your entire life.
Especially considering the contribution it's going to make to the quality of the rest of your life.
Right. But, you know, like I had a mom with a child in this week, and I suggested to her that she scramble eggs and then take the very thing she would put in an omelet, whether it was, you know, sautéed mushrooms or green peppers or pieces of tomato or broccoli or, you know, whatever you like in an omelet, and put it in a muffin cup and pour that scrambled egg in a muffin cup and bake that at a 325 degree oven and do a, you know, six of those on Sunday afternoon, and then she and her daughter can eat those for breakfast Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Right.
Because you just pick it up like a muffin and just eat the egg that way. I mean, we eat deviled eggs cold and hard-boiled eggs
sure.
cold. There's no reason we can't eat other eggs cold. But it was like, you know, that 15 minutes that it'll take you to do that will take care of your breakfast for 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, oatmeal, though, is so easy. You put it in a bowl and you put it in the microwave and walk away and come back and it's ready for you.
Well, actually, I have an easier one. I have a client right now, and she, like me, loves her cup of tea at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I had her do was to get a wide neck thermos jar. And she puts the oatmeal in the wide-neck thermos jar, and when she makes her cup of tea at 9 o'clock at night, she pours the boiling water into the thermos jar, and then the oatmeal is ready when she gets up in the morning.
Awesome. And still warm.
And still warm.
Cool.
And so she has nothing to do except pour the boiling water and the oatmeal into the thermos jar.
Right.
But the idea of eating food that occurs in nature, looking at your food and asking how close it is to nature. The same child that I talked about that came in the practice, you know, one of her favorite foods was chicken nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went up on the website and showed her what chicken nuggets were made of when you use this mechanically removed meat. And so, you know, when you take all the meat off that you can sell as a chicken breast and to the wing joint and all of that, and then whatever is stuck on the carcass, you know, you peel some of that stuff off, and that goes to the pet food people. And then there's still bibs and bobs of meat that are hooked onto that flesh, and you can do one of two things. You can either mechanically remove that meat by sending it through these great big brushes that carve the meat off and get little bits of the bone with it. If you actually take a loop,
calcium.
Yeah, if you actually take a loop, if you take a magnifying glass and you look at ground turkey or ground chicken, you will actually see little pieces of bone that have been peeled off. Or you can take them and throw them in a 50,000-gallon vat with alkalis and just use alkalis to dissolve it off, right. And because it is so bacterially contaminated, what they have to do is they have to wash that meat with ammonia.
Mm-hmm.
And because the ammonia makes it taste so bad, they have to use artificial flavors and artificial colors in there. And so that's why I've said repeatedly, if there's one thing you would never get me to eat in a public restaurant, it's ground meat. You know, I would never eat a hamburger.
Right.
And it wouldn't make any difference if it was a turkey burger. You know, I wouldn't eat it in a public place. It's just not going to happen. So the nature of it is the majority of these things are washed with ammonia.
Right.
Now, if you want a turkey burger, go buy a turkey breast, hand it to your butcher, and grind it. That way you know all the turkey meat has come off the same turkey,
yes,
at least. And it doesn't have tendons and gristle and all the other parts. Well, when I showed this child the video of how they make this stuff that looks like pink poo... It does. It looks like tubes of pink poo. And when I told her, I said, you know, you don't just have the gristle and the tendon connectors and everything like that. You've got chicken eyeballs, you know,
and blood vessels
in there. And, you know, all of these other parts, these what I would consider to be non-edible parts. I mean, do you ever sit down and eat a plate of chicken eyeballs?
I haven't tried that one yet.
Nope. So when we look at
how did the child respond?
I don't think she's going to be eating any chicken nuggets anymore. I think she really got it. But her mother was equally disgusted in terms of looking at that. But, you know, when I tell people, eat what occurs in nature. If I'm going to eat a piece of chicken, I want it to look like a wing. I want it to look like a leg.
Right.
I want it to look like it actually came from the bird. And that's why if somebody happens to be a beef eater, I don't happen to be a beef eater. But go to the market. Buy yourself an eye round or a bottom round or a top round or a sirloin or a tenderloin. I always tell people, if you're going to eat animals that have four legs, whether it's a pig, whether it's a lamb, whether it's a cow, then buy the cuts that have the word loin and round in the name.
Right.
Because when you get eye round, top round, bottom round, sirloin, tenderloin, at least you're getting the things that have the lowest amount of saturated fat. Hand that to the butcher. Have him grind it on the spot. That way you know all that burger that's in that package at least came from the same cow.
Right.
When you buy a pound of hamburger, you could have 25 different cows in there.
Or, as in that case that we looked at last year with the woman who has paralysis from the ground beef patties that were labeled as, quotes, Angus from a large chain, there were possibly 25,000 cows in that because of the numerous sources that the meat came from.
Exactly. So when we talk about eating what occurs in nature, we want to realize that a whole lot of these foods that claim that they have benefits are really pretty far away from nature. And when you start looking at all of these things that have additives in them, whether it's iced tea or whether it's, you know, brownies with melatonin, we want to understand that you may actually be getting amounts of these compounds day after day after day that are not necessarily in your best interest. You know, the FDA's efforts and their laws provide limited assurance in the safety of functional foods. And so when we look at threats of dietary supplements, we know that in 2008, which is the last year that we have statistics for, there were zero deaths from nutritional supplements. Nobody died from a vitamin. Nobody died from a mineral, a homeopathic remedy, an herb, a Chinese formula, an enzyme. Nobody. Zero. but there were 106,000 deaths that could be attributed to pharmaceutical drugs taken according to manufacturers' directions. There were 16,000 deaths just from taking over-the-counter pain medication. 16,000 of them. 106,000 deaths. You're talking about 122,000 deaths. So all in all, the supplement industry sure got a great safety record overall. But the thing that I don't want you to do is I don't want you to go to the market and start looking at every label for claims that are going to benefit whatever health condition you've been challenged with and think that as soon as it's got that heart healthy logo on the front, that that's the best thing in the world that you should put in your cart. Because if it comes out of a box or a bag or a can, it's probably a step down from what you bought at the butcher, the baker, or the vegetable seller.
That's right. You know, one of the other things that was glaring to me, and I see it every time I go to the grocery store, is this omega and DHA enhanced milk. I think that's another travesty, because the amounts of DHA that are in there, the DHA is the omega-3 fat that's very good for your brain health, you pay through the nose for it. It's much more economic for most of these supplemented foods to actually go and buy the supplement and buy a non-supplemented food. You'll save much more money. It's like the melatonin brownies at $4. You can buy a bottle of melatonin for $10 for right. 3 months' supply. It just doesn't make sense to buy these things because they're way too expensive. They're using the label claim to sell it.
It's either that or we're just going to have to go into the brownie business, doctor. That's all there is to it.
Well, that's a consideration.
Dr. Fred Harvey, internist, gerontologist, member of the American... Holistic Medical Association. And as always, delighted to have him as a guest on No Nonsense Nutrition. He's here on the third Monday of the month. Thank you, Dr. Harvey.
Thank you so much, Eve.
I appreciate the perspective. You know, here on No Nonsense Nutrition, what we're trying to do is to, well, not only educate, but empower you to make a better choice. You know, every time you sit down and you eat a plate of food, you either get more alive or more dead. And that's really what it comes down to. Might sound a little coarse, but it's really true. You have a choice. You have a choice about where you're going to eat lunch. You have a choice about how many vegetables you're going to get into your body today. And so every time you make that choice for health, you help to ensure your future.